Welcome to Founders Focus, a podcast made for founders by founders. I'm Scott Case, CEO and co-founder of Upside, and I created Founders Focus to help share free resources and actionable advice. Together, we're building a community for business leaders, entrepreneurs, and founders to come together to tackle today's challenges. This podcast is powered by my awesome team at Upside. Please visit foundersfocus.com to join the live video sessions or to catch up on past topics. Introduce our co-host for today, Carrie Clark, who is the co-founder and CEO of Breakout, and she's the founder and CEO of Uplift Parents. And prior to being an entrepreneur and sequestered at home with tiny children, she is a longtime Googler, and she's built multi-million dollar businesses from scratch within that world. And she'll tell you a little bit more about herself right now. So Carrie, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. So my name's Carrie, and I founded a couple of companies. Basically, I was running Uplift Parents, which I built, which was a company that helps companies support their working moms and parents in general. And then around the time that COVID started, I started another company called Breakout, which is a virtual event platform for remote team building. Everything from workshops to support circles to fun activities like tie-dye classes and scavenger hunts, all done virtually. And so have a lot to talk about on how to connect teams, how to pivot your business while during COVID. And also I have two young kids, as Scott alluded to. My kids are 5 and 7. They're home with me now. My door is locked, so hopefully there'll be no interruptions today. But yeah, lots to dig into.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I guess the main topic here is about just remote work. A lot of us were thrown into remote work kind of haphazardly. Maybe we worked once or twice a month from home or when we were on the road. But, you know, it's a real challenge. And I think one of the things that we're all realizing is this is not a sprint. This is going to be a while. And so how do we get good at it? So I want to actually start first, just as Carrie, as an entrepreneur, we talked about the fact that you've started a company. You had Uplift Parents going prior to the pandemic. You were obviously working with people who were parents working, you know, in all kinds of different companies, everything from TaskRabbit to Google and Auric. I'd love to understand just your entrepreneurial journey a little bit before we dive into what you've learned about remote work. So tell us a little bit about what you were doing in January and February. What was the trajectory of the business? And then kind of we'll get into how you may have changed things.
Right. So I had started Uplift about 3 years ago, and it had like done successfully. But I think the way I like to say it is that it was always successful enough to give us hope. but I actually don't know if it was ever going to be in itself its own big, big company. So it was, you know, we had great clients like Google and TaskRabbit, and things were growing. But I think what happened with COVID is that I've run distributed teams for 10 years. Uplift was completely distributed, and we saw COVID coming because of that. So my automator lives in China, not that far from Wuhan. My writer lives in Barcelona. And so we saw this play out around the world. And late February, we realized everything is going to shut down. All schools are going to shut down. Everyone's going to be working remotely. Like, the world is going to change. And the world is basically going to be on fire. And if you aren't a fire extinguisher, no one's going to pay attention. And so we looked at what we were doing with Uplift, and we realized actually there was a lot of changes that we could make and take all these things that we'd been working with parents on boundaries, how to, you know, to have work-life balance, how to focus, those types of pieces, and how could we bring this type of support and knowledge to a wider base and do it in the vein of what's happening with virtual teams. And so it was interesting where we made this shift that's been really successful. It's actually helped us sell more of our parents' activities and sort of support there too. And it's allowed us to impact way more people and really, really just like create a whole new sort of revenue stream for us.
That's awesome. So it's one of the things where, you get new information. And I may, if we have time, I want to come back to that notion of it's just enough to have hope. I've been in that mode a few times in my life as an entrepreneur. It's like, oh, how do I make that call? But I want to talk for a second about splitting out the difference between, you talk distributed teams, right? Which could be in a Google office in all of those places or in other places, or, you know, remote teams. Talk a little bit about the difference between that and being quarantined. I know for myself, there's a big difference between me working from home and getting to do whatever I want out in the world and working from home and being stuck here. So tell me a little bit about how you see the difference there and what that's, how that's played out for you.
There's a couple of things. One is that there's the difference between distributed teams and remote teams. Distributed teams are quite hard because usually there are going to be some people who are in the same location, and then there'll be other people. And I don't know if any, I know I was this person, but when you are that person who is on the video conference when everyone else is in the room, it is a horrible experience. And I did that a lot when I was at Google. And so in some ways, this move that like everyone is remote is actually better than this hybrid. So that's one change. The second is people don't have anything to do. And so we are seeing that, you know, work-life balance is always a problem with remote teams because your work and your life are very melded. You don't have like, you know, you might be like sitting at night in the same place you've been working all day. But now that you have nothing else to do, we're finding that burnout is skyrocketing. Boundaries are just pretty much non-existent. In fact, people are twice as likely to be struggling right now with burnout than they are with productivity. And so I would say that as a leader, it's really thinking about how do you acknowledge the fact that like people might just be working because they're bored? And how do you force people to like actually, like boundaries need to be even more stricter than in a normal world?
Do you see the effect of the quarantine part? You know, your children probably would have gone to school at least for part of the day, you know, and now they're home, and, you know, it's a different thing than, you know, if I worked remotely and my kids wandered off to school and they were gone for 6 hours a day, it's a completely different experience than we're here all the time.
Well, there's a couple. When I look at the populations that are affected the most right now, it's working parents, because now they have two more than full-time jobs. They are like homeschooler, taking care of their kids and working their normal job. And then it's people who are living alone, where, you know, actually going to work when you were living alone was socialization. Now you're not only living alone, you might not be able to see anyone. And we'll talk to people that haven't seen someone in person outside of like a grocery store in like weeks. And that's really hard. And so I think there's this emotional struggle on both those sides. And then there's just this isolation where, you know, even as a parent, so like for me personally, like I have a house full of people and I still feel lonely, you know, and like I miss being around people, and I've gone through bouts of that. And so what we have seen just with employees is that there's an emotional roller coaster that's happening unlike anything we've seen before. And one of the things that we really suggest is, you know, when you're having like a one-on-one with someone, is just have that actual check-in to be like, how are you? And it's not that how we throw around that phrase, but it's really checking and saying, you know, like, really, how are you? And like, maybe you help give people languages on that, where, you know, some of the things that we do in some of our work is, you know, are you red, yellow, green on a scale of 1 to 10? Because sometimes people might not be able to talk about it, but like, being able to just give people a language and a way to talk about how they are will help you be able to meet them where they are that day.
You know, I love having red, yellow, green, or 1 through 10, and, you know, how are you right now? The other thing I've seen, and I'd love to for you to comment on this, is, you know, not everyone is experiencing the same thing. Right, we might be home, we might be isolated, we might be by ourselves, but there's other things going on in our lives too. And so, like, making the assumption that, you know, as an example, must be really hard for you to be alone. I've talked to some folks like, I'm introverted. This has actually been really good. However, you know, my mother, my sister, my cousin, my somebody else has got this problem, this problem, this problem. So it's like trying to unpack being, I guess, empathetic to understand that everybody's got a lot of things going on. And this is like one piece of it. But how do you get at that? You know, how are you doing right now and not make any assumptions about what might come back to you?
Yeah, and I think what you're bringing up is just be curious, right? Just like, just go in with the curiosity of like really caring what people like ask, like, how are you? And really want to know what that answer is.
So you brought up one-on-ones, which is an example of a kind of a structural thing that for a company like Upsides, we've always had one-on-ones as part of our natural course. So anybody who's a people manager has one-on-ones with their teammates. Are there new, I guess, processes or mechanics that you've seen that are that companies are implementing to help with kind of this combination of, hey, we're new at remote work and there's this quarantine pandemic, kids working from home stuff. Are there adaptations you've seen or processes? And if you can share them, that'd be really helpful.
We're seeing most companies are doing some type of stand-up on a daily basis with working teams, and that's been really, really effective. Other things, though, that we are seeing is that internal meetings on average are up 40%. So to give you an idea, there are very, like, external meetings have fallen, but meetings on the whole have not fallen at all. So that is just, it's kind of crazy. And so with that, you need to really just be very conscious of the meetings that you're having. So one thing that we have seen be really effective is having office hours. So if you are a leader who makes a lot of decisions or has a team, like, just schedule an hour a day, hour a couple times a week, where people can pop in for like 10, 15 minutes instead of having to book a full 30-minute meeting. And having those types of pieces has been really helpful. Also just scheduling time just to hang out. Like, you know, like sometimes we've seen people have like open Zoom lines where they might just be working, not talking, just working both on or like as a group on the Zoom line. So if they have a question, they can just pop it and like say it right there or not feel as isolated. And those are really good if you have like something that you're all working on together and trying to get something out really quickly, or just to have some more of camaraderie. So it's that balance between, you don't want to make too many more meetings. And yet you do want to stay more connected.
You bring up the office hours. One of the components of that I found to be important is letting it be okay to have 5-minute conversation. You know, one of the things that you had when you had a physical central office is you'd bump into somebody in the kitchen for 60 seconds while you got, you know, in my case, I drink tea, like pouring the tea, putting the tea bag away, and then we're done, right? Yeah. It's the informality of it that we've sort of lost. Are there other things psychologically going on that we need to be aware of? You know, are there things that we need to just, because of all this pressure and the uncertainty, are there sort of psychological challenges for employees that as leaders, we need to be both first aware of and then supporting?
I mean, yes. I think I'll give it just a good personal example for myself is that I feel like I'm doing okay. Like if you ask me, I'm doing okay. And then last week I was listening to a podcast, The Daily, like a news podcast, and I bawled during the entire like 20 minutes of it. And I realized, oh, I just really needed to cry. And so I think when we think about employees, like if we were in the office with all this Black Lives Matters movement, that's like all we would be talking about, right? Like you'd just be talking about it every time you went to the coffee thing. You just would, as you're getting lunch, you'd be talking about like what's going on there, what's going on. And like, there's no forums for those conversations right now. And so there's this like level of support that's not happening in the same way that you would normally naturally have. And so I think just, you know, going back to like, what are the psychological pieces? I think that's one of like, you don't feel like you have the same support that you might've had with like just people in the office. I would say secondly, there's so much uncertainty. So as a leader, the more you can do to map out different plans or different things to erase some of that uncertainty. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with this pandemic, but the more you can be like, here's the different types of plans that this could look like, or here's the different plans, that's really, really helpful for people. And then I would say three is just, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity right here to actually connect with your employees in a way that you might not have been either, because people are just more raw. So people, you know, parents are showing that they have kids now, when before they might not talk about it, right? Because they're popping up. You know, people are talking about the fact that they do live alone or how they're feeling. And so there's this moment to actually create deeper connections within your team. And so finding ways to foster those types of conversations and communication within your team can be really powerful.
Well, your timing is good, because one of our founders focus members had a child popping in and out of their virtual background, which I found to be very amusing. When you're creating the space, right, it's sort of this tension between like fewer meetings, and yet you want to create this connective tissue for folks. And there's a, you know, we've seen different types of strategies to do that. So that's one piece. And then the other is, you talked a little bit about the uncertainty. And I've noticed that one of the things for me is providing clarity, even when I might have to change the decision sometime in the next 6 months, but having sort of a stake in the ground provides people some certainty in a place that's uncertain. Even if I'm only 80% certain that's going to stay that way, there's something about having that bit grounded to say, well, at least I can manage that for the near term. Are you seeing other strategies that leaders are taking to kind of give clarity or give certainty to folks that, you know, with all the variants that are outside the business, inside the business?
Yeah, I think assuming that this is the long haul is one of the best things you can do. Like, I saw a lot of parents in particular have to like make plans on what was going to happen like 10 different times, because they kept thinking, so I started interviewing people at this process, and I'd always ask, like right when all of this started, and I keep interviewing people, and I ask always, how long do you think this is going to last? The very beginning, everyone's like, oh, a month. Then it was like two or three. This is like, keep lasting. And now people are like 6 months, a year, like it's extended. And so that like jumpstart, when you're going to make a much different plan if you think this is a month than you think if it's a year, right? And so I think assuming at this point that it is a much more longer term, being a little bit more conservative is one of the things I would recommend for leaders, because if it changes, you can always go back and change it, but like that, it's most likely going to last a really long time.
I love that you brought that up, because I think that one of the things that I thought I had given myself enough time at the beginning of this, I was like, it's going to be a shit show for 6 months. Then after that, we'll have 12 months of recession. And of course, now we're coming up on the 6 month mark. That was at the middle of March, so middle of September. And now my horizon is much further out, 12, 18 months. So longer term, but also assuming it's bad, right? It's much worse than you think, and being much less optimistic about what that might look like, because it's much, much easier to take advantage of things going well.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lot easier to go, well, you know what, it turns out, you know, travel came back twice as fast as we thought. Great. Like, that's a problem I'd like to have, as opposed to, well, we were planning it to be here and now it's down here. So are there any techniques or things you've seen other leaders do that are looking out for that longer term? So, and you know, how are they planning? Is it simply time, or is there other things that you've seen people do?
I mean, I think looking at like, what is the worst case scenario is always a good place to start, right? Like, because if you can make it work in the worst case, you can make it in any case. So I would start there. So Tim Ferriss has a really interesting exercise called fear setting that I like highly recommend anytime you're facing something that you're really afraid of. And the way it works is you write down what are all the things that you're afraid of in making a decision. And then in one column, in the next column, you write down how do you like mitigate against those? So like, how do you make them less? And then in the final column, you write like, how could I get back? Like, if let's say that thing came true, I couldn't mitigate against it, how do I get back to where I am now? And like, there's just something about, I kind of think like that's a good exercise, but to be honest, any exercise where you're writing things down is really strong, because you just need to get it out of your head. You will feel better. It'll make more sense. And so I would just like highly recommend, like, write down your biggest fears. Write them down. And then like, you're facing them, you're looking at them, and like, we're all smart people. You most likely can figure something out to challenge those.
It's really good advice. It's an exercise that if you have a team, a leadership team, it's a great exercise to do together, where sort of everybody writes them down and then you kind of put them together, and you can, one way we do it is we put initials next to them. So we sort of vote which ones are we most concerned about. And then it allows you to unpack them a little bit, so that the whole team is aware of, okay, we were all nervous about running out of capital, or an employee, a key employee has left the business, or it's taken us longer to get this product done, or whatever it is that's in the way. But man, I writing things down, whew, so valuable. Really, really, really good. So we're going to be working from home for a while. So let's take that long view. Could be 12 months, could be 18 months. What are kind of some of the implications for that? And let's assume for now that we're not only working from home, but we've got our family with us, right? We're sort of all at home in the case of a family, and we come to the parent side of it. So what are some of the implications that we should be aware of in that environment, that it's a longer period of time?
Yeah, I mean, I think for parents, I'm just going to take that one for an example. I think my number one advice is always assume that it's the long time. So you stop having to make plans over and over again and assume just kind of the worst. The second is think about what really matters to you most. And a good question for that is like, what do you want to say 5 years ago happened right now? Because I am seeing a lot of parents being like, oh, my kids are eating horribly, or they watched an extra TV show, and I don't think they're going to care in 5 years, right? They're going to look back at this time and probably remember maybe getting some of those extra cuddles, or like, there'll be other moments too. And so I think making that list, just as like, as a parent, what do you want to remember this time by? And then like, being able to focus that, because it'll help you let go of all those other pieces. And then just being kind to yourself, because parents, in the best of cases, are hard on themselves, especially moms. And right now, I see it over and over again. You know, people are like, I'm not eating as healthy as I was, or my kids are watching so much screen time and all of these pieces, or maybe I'm not getting everything done, like performing at the work the way I want to. And what I would just say is give yourself a little bit of grace. So that's for the parents. I think for a manager and people who might be on this call, it's a long-term time. You have to focus on culture, and you have to be really intentional about it, because that is the difference really with, I mean, you have to always be, when you're growing a team, intentional about culture. But when you're remote, it's even more important, because it's not going to happen if you don't try to foster it.
Your point about grace and giving yourself permission, right? Just being okay with the fact that, you know, that some stuff's just not going to get done.
We actually do this exercise, we call it the bomb list, and you write down all the things that you're okay bombing, you're okay screwing up. So for example, like my kids, their socks don't match. You know, for the news, I listen to the daily, I listen to like 10 minutes while I'm like making my bed on like whatever's on Google Home, but I'm not checking it constantly, and I'm okay with that. And it's like, what is your list of things? Like, our backyard's kind of a mess, and I'm okay with all of those things. And that is very freeing, because you focus like, what are those? I'm able to be bad at these because I want to be good at those things I really care about.
Yeah. You used the word intentional before. There's some stuff that you can just put in that bucket and say, you know what? It is what it is. So let's go the other direction. So talk about people who might be supporting people who are living alone. And in particular, like you said, folks who maybe the only people they're interacting with is the food delivery person, or maybe the they're going to the grocery store. What kind of support do they need?
So advice I have for them is, you know, for people living alone is reconnect with hobbies and really think about what your passions are there, because there's things that you can do with that. Secondly, we call an SOS list, and that is a list of things that you can create that makes you feel better when you're feeling bad. So you can use this when you're stressed, when you're feeling lonely, and it might be things like calling a friend, going and listening to my favorite music and dancing around, flipping through photos of like great times that I had before, you know, whatever those things that like light you up, and having like an actual list, because sometimes when you're feeling like that, it's hard to remember what those are. So we actually recommend writing those down. And then thinking through like what gives you purpose? Like what gives you meaning in your life, and trying to do more of that, because that can fill that hole of people of that like people would. So is it that you like to do art? Do you like helping people? There's ways to help people these days. You can, you know, there's virtual volunteering. There's volunteering that you can do, like delivering food to other people. There's ways you can do that. Do you love moving your body in any certain way? And really finding some of those activities to start actually punctuating your day. And then I would say the final piece for the people living alone is, and this is true for everyone, but be firm with your boundaries. Like make sure you have a time that you are signing off, put that computer away. Sometimes we say, give yourself a fake commute where you put your headphones on, you walk around your block, you come home, you like change out of your sweatpants that you were wearing into new sweatpants, who knows, but like anything that you do that like marks your day, and like give yourself something there, because there's a way to just like keep on working, and then you won't spend the time to like find out what really makes you excited.
So that brings something up, the boundaries piece. We had a question from the chat. So how do you think about the when part of policies? You've got distributed teams. What are the expectations about the when work time? Do you give people clarity around, hey, we expect the team to be, you know, mostly available during these periods of time? And how do you create the space for focusing on life? You know, not a lot of people can go on vacation somewhere or take time off, because your time off is in the same space that you're in. But, you know, what have you been seeing, and how have teams, employees been reacting to creating clarity around those from an expectation standpoint?
So look at your team and see what's going on. We've seen companies give mental health days once a month because they realized people weren't taking vacation. So they were like, okay, we're going to force, this is a day that you get and you don't get it back. You can either take it this month or not. And it's almost required. And we're seeing that work. We've seen people, this one company I'm working with, said usually at this point, 70% of people had taken vacation and only 20% had. And so they actually instituted, it wasn't completely mandatory, but basically all of leadership took a week off, and the whole company took a week off together, basically. And so there's things that you can do there. As far as like set times, it depends on the size of your team. And I would actually try to encourage it to be by team, because teams are so unique. And I would work on figuring it out together. So you guys could sit down, discuss like, what does good boundaries mean? Because you might tell a parent, oh, you can't, as a team, we're not working after 5, but that like completely stresses them out, because they need to spend a few hours during the day taking care of their kids, and they need to work after 5 to be able to be productive. And so I wouldn't make assumptions. I'd have that same curiosity of like talking to people and say, what would you want? And even having a way that you guys all talk about it together, and then you can sort of figure out what rules those are. And rules that we've seen are having days that you have no meetings, having like times, like on weekends, we don't send emails. You might get a bunch of emails Monday morning at 8 a.m., but it's like, we don't send them, right? And so what are those rules that you can come together and create?
Cool. So I'm going to give you a question that, well, you'll decide how you want to answer it. But the question is, what is your daily routine, and how have you set those boundaries?
So good question. I am an early bird. I wake up at 5:30 without an alarm clock every day. Usually go down and spend, I have about an hour and a half of some type of self-care thing where I'll journal, do some meditating, work out. And then I start working. So I'm working really early at like 7 a.m. I'm on. And I basically, my kids, for some reason, even though they're 5 and 7, now sleep until like 10 a.m. So that's good because I get some like really solid time. And I pretty solidly work until about 5. I will take some breaks during the day to just like shoot the shit with my kids. And then at 5, I have a routine where I make my list of to-dos to do the next day. I, you know, go through everything and do really lots of like crossing off my list so I feel like things are closed. And if I'm really stressed about it, I will journal or do something to like be able to compartmentalize that. And then I like hang out with my family and kids and have some good time. And then I go to bed around 10:30. So that was probably a little bit too much information, but like basically as far as like how I have those boundaries, it's, I kind of put my, I have a room that I work in, this room that my computer lives in. It doesn't come out of here that often, or I try not to. So that's one thing. And I also just make sure to, I just work really hard during the day so that I can get it all out. Oh, one other thing I actually will say, I do work every Saturday morning. And people were like, and people are always shocked by that because they're like, that's not work-life balance. Why are you spending? But the reason I do that is I work for like a time and then I don't even think about work for the rest of the weekend. And it allows me to get it out of my head and then be able to completely disconnect. And so that for me is what works.
I think, look, especially as founders and entrepreneurs, I think pandemic, no pandemic, you know, I think those boundaries are often difficult for us anyway. Like I typically work Saturday and Sunday mornings for the same reason. I get up, I get it out of my head, and then I can chill for the rest of the day because I wake up, my brain starts to go.
Yeah.
So let's talk about stand-ups. You talked about having an all-team stand-up. At Upside, we do 8:45 in the morning. We kind of declared, hey, you can kind of work from anywhere, but we're operating on Eastern Daylight Time because the bulk of our team was in the DC Metro when all this happened. And so we've just sort of said, look, you're going to spend 2 weeks in California because your family's there or something, great, but you're going to have, we're going to operate on an Eastern time cadence. That gets more complicated when you go globally. So how do you deal with that? Do you record them? Do you create them as optional? Do you move them around in time so that you catch more people? You worked in global teams. How do you tackle that?
I think the best thing is to move them around in time, or run two different ones if it's, you know, in all hands and there's lots of people. Because otherwise someone's always got the short end of that stick. So that's what I would recommend. And then I would also think about like, how often do you need to have one that's all hands? Like what is the right cadence for everyone together versus just an individual team? Because it's probably less demanding on another team if, on someone who, like if it's only once a week, they're meeting as the entire team and their working team, they can, who might be located with them, they could work differently. So I would think about that there, you know, something every day, if you're in China and you're having to like stay up till 10 o'clock at night is much different than like once a week.
That makes sense. So another question is more about your business. So I'm going to ask one and then I'll pile on with one. So there's a big difference between scaling your company and focusing on growth and scale, and then sort of deciding what your scope is and running the business as a small business and saying, you know what, this is it. This is, we're not going to have 10,000 employees and try to, you know, dominate. How has your thinking evolved through where you started with the Uplift parents and where Breakout is, and sort of how are you contemplating those choices as an entrepreneur?
I think I'm more patient now. So I started, I worked at Google. It was all about scale, right? And I wanted to help as many women as possible. And I felt like there was a huge business with Uplift Parents to do that. But I think I focused on like, how do I, you know, go get funding or how do I grow this really fast versus how do I make this sustainable? In today's business, today's world, funding's really up in the air. And so all of a sudden my priority became, let's, how do I make this sustainable versus how do I grow this as fast as possible? And also just, you know, I'm having patience of, let me figure out what this is first. And if this does become something that has insane product market fit, I can flip that switch, right? Like that's a possibility. Instead of like building it for that, I think it's like seeing if that happens. It's a much different place. And honestly, it's made me just way more chill. Just going back to the boundaries and the limits, like, you know, just having that pressure of like, oh, actually, no, I can make this. How do I make this a sustainable business versus a scaled one has been really, really helpful for me. And I still think it can be. Like, it's not, that dream isn't like off the table. It's just, I'm focusing on other things first.
Smart. It's really good. All right. So I think I've got time for kind of two more questions. So we'll do some kind of speedy rounds here. So people are creatures of habit. Is it more important to create those habits now and have consistency, or is it more important to maintain some level of flexibility and sort of be more adaptive, or do you have to have a blend of both?
I think you're going to have a blend of both, but I will say that like major changes, life changes are great times to create new habits. You're going to create them no matter what. So this change of like all of a sudden I'm working from home, and when you end up going back, those are really good opportunities. So if you do want to create new habits, seize that opportunity. But I think things are going to keep changing.
Yeah, I think that's right. You brought up writing things down. I think writing things down and sort of running your own life experiments. Hey, for the next 30 days, I'm going to wake up at 5, right? And I'm going to see what happens, or I'm going to exercise at a different time, or I'm not going to be overscheduled. Those kinds of changes you can adapt and see what happens. We've got time for maybe two more. So do you think of your company, so For Breakout, have you figured out how to defend your position in the market, right? There's lots of people out there that are talking about, we've got tips and tricks and things that we can do to help you stay remote. How are you thinking about that? And it kind of ties to your, do you go to for scale or do you create a sustainable business? But how are you thinking about that?
We're thinking about how do we create really amazing experiences? And it's all about the experience and the brand. So everything we do, I mean, so my background is I was an event producer. I then had worked a lot on, you know, building really amazing cultures at places like, you know, Google. And I have just been thinking about this for a long time. And so I'm bringing those thoughts, and I did a lot of coaching on video, and that's what Uplift Parents was about. So we did a lot of how do we connect people over video, you know, remotely, really strongly. So we're bringing that background to just create really unique experiences. And so it's, for me, it's about the brand and the experiences that we're creating. And we're getting really good reviews there. And so that's where I think it's defendable. It's like, it's more, we're doing something different versus something else.
All right, so I got two more for you. It should be easy, super easy. You ready? You have two young children at home. You're cranking 12 hours a day. Is it like a whole situation where you're just letting them run around your house and then you hope that they don't destroy anything? Who's managing them when you're cranking all day?
I'm in the sweet spot with them. They're 5 and 7. So they are in this amazing place where they are independent enough that they can kind of do things. So that's been really, really helpful. My husband is also at home around. He works for the government, so he is helping. And again, we're both doing that, but both helping there. But a lot of it is just letting them independent, you know, like getting them, like my daughter's teaching herself to code. They like have been reading, I think my daughter read on Epic like 1,000 books in 3 months. And so really having them like sort of learn independently in that way. And we'll see what happens. I think we're thinking about what does this mean just on the school side. It was fine, just going back to that whole conversation, it was fine for a few months. now that it's probably for a year, we're looking, do we get a tutor? Do we do, what do we do on that? How do we do socialization? There's a whole slew of things. But yeah, my kids are kind of destroying the house. Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. My kids, when they were that age, it would have been a whole Lord of the Flies situation. I'm confident of it. We would have been tied up somewhere and who knows what would have gone on. All right, last question. You picked the song that we listened to or the band that we listened to beforehand. And you told me a little story about something that they have been doing, which is Sophie Tucker is the group. So what have they been doing throughout this whole pandemic? And we'll post a link in the chat for those who are interested.
They have been running a daily concert at 1 p.m. Where they play a concert for every single day of quarantine. I think they're in like 140 days or something like that, where they just play. And they're the cutest band. We have so many dance parties in my house. It's amazing. We really, really love them.
Well, I appreciate that. It's a good resource for people who need a break. So Carrie, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before we close out, if people would like to get more information from you or work with you or recommend you to others, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah. So you can go to breakout.chat. And that's our website. Or on the parent side, it's upliftparents.com. And we have on the Uplift Parents one, a newsletter that you can sign up for as a parent that gives you just like a daily tip to make your life easier. And if you link there, there's both contact forms and you can fill those out to get in contact.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Founders Focus. What did you think? You got any feedback for us? Got a topic that you'd like us to discuss or maybe a future co-host? We'd love to hear from you. Just hit me up on LinkedIn at T. Scott Case and join us at foundersfocus.com to stay up to date with the latest episodes and join us live every week at our Founders Focus sessions. Hope to see you there.